Welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 531 for Wednesday, the 28th of June, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, having a nice afternoon when the weather's calmed down, and joining me is our favorite World Superbike commentator, none other than Harry Lloyd.
Hey, how's it going?
That's not too bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, it is pretty good. Still pretty tired from the Assen weekend. Perhaps the hottest talking point of the Assen weekend was how the circuit managed to absolutely destroy the way of getting into the circuit. So a 30-kilometer drive from my hotel took me 2.5 hours on Sunday morning. And that's not like I was leaving at like 8:30. I left my hotel at 7 a.m. and it still took me 2.5 hours. So big shout outs to the Assen circuit. And that's the last time I'll mention it, because it takes a lot to like annoy me and like get me annoyed to the point where I feel like I have to tweet about something. But like, I actually had to tweet about this, and I'm sure that lots of people saw lots of journalists and paddock people complaining about the VIP route. So this is just me confirming that yes, it was as bad as everybody was saying. So sometimes watching the races from home is actually better and less stressful. And then also the 200-kilometer drive to Amsterdam Airport in a Citroen C1 after the race has pretty much destroyed my back. So,
See, I don't know much about Citroens, but I do know that Europeans make some small cars. So I can only imagine that you were driving around in an oversized briefcase.
They do make some very small cars, and this car did not like going above 140 kilometers an hour. It really, really started to shake around. So that's like, I think that's like 110 mile an hour, I think, maybe a bit less. But yeah, so that was
140 kilometers.
Is that 110 miles? I don't know.
No, I think you're around about 70, 75 miles per hour.
What? Yeah. No way.
Because 120 kph? That's like 60, 65 miles per hour, right? So 140, you got to be like 75.
No way. Yeah, 140. Oh, yeah, 80. Damn, 87 miles an hour. That's absolutely nothing.
No.
Oh, God, I was going so slow. Oh, my God. Jesus, I've gone up to 100 mile an hour in my fucking Polo, and that's a 1.2 pole. Anyway, enough complaining. We're here to talk about motorbikes, not shitty rental cars. Assen, apart from the weather and apart from the traffic situation, a great weekend.
Yes, it was a fantastic. I love this track. It's probably my favorite track on the schedule. It does run close with Mugello, but obviously both provide great racing. But there's something about Assen, even when World Superbike is there, it's always, always close battles in all classes.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, lots of people say that, Assen's not the same anymore. And sure, that first half of the lap is a little slow, but you know, the second half of the lap and just the circuit overall is still really, really good. And as you said, Scale, you know, it's right up there with, you know, your Mugellos, your Phillip Islands, always one to watch for. We know that the racing's always going to be good. Then, you know, you also get the added excitement of the weather coming in. Weather, of course, did come in. So it's a good weekend. Of course, unlike last show, we only have this one race to talk about, so we can probably go into a bit more detail with a couple of things. A couple of thank yous. Thank you, first of all, to everybody who rode in for the hosting duties. We are going through those. Big thank you to you as well, Skylar, for replying to everybody's email, and hopefully we'll be sending out some responses to that one. Also, big thank you to everybody who wrote in for the Sheen competition. If you would like to win a free copy of the Sheen autobiography picture book, then, as I said, send motopod@motopodcast.com an email with Sheen in all caps as the title, and then tell us about your racing hero, and then we'll randomly select a couple of people for our friends at Bloomsbury Books to fire you over a copy. So yeah, it's as easy as that. You know, just write us an email, and then we'll pick a couple out. So we already have a couple in there. So get writing in, and hopefully everybody will enjoy this show. Also, big thank you to everybody who is continuing to donate and subscribe. I continue to be quite lazy and have a quite unmanageable email inbox. So one of these days, probably when I have my extra day in Germany tomorrow, I'll finally get through the list of everything. But yeah, thank you to everybody who does. I'm just sorry that I'm too lazy to go get everybody's name.
Right. And so considering that we're actually on time this week, which was a good thing as of late, we actually have some news that's not necessarily breaking, but it's actually relative. Yeah. So, yeah. Morbidelli has signed a new contract for MotoGP with the Mark VDS squad. This is something that we kind of knew was going to happen. Not necessarily from rumors, just from what looked obvious. He was talking to Primark Ducati as well. But I think when they were talking to the Mark Vidas team, there was something about, or his manager, number of years versus equipment versus yada, yada, yada. But yeah, he's still in a happy place, and he will be basically replacing Tito Rabat on the Mark Vidas MotoGP team. Jack Miller on that team is still undecided because Jack has lost his factory contract with Honda, but that doesn't mean that Mark Vidas won't sign him and then to that team as well and still have the two-bike team. However, with the two-bike team being there, you have to look at LCR with Cal Crutchlow now getting the HRC contract. That leaves LCR with a little open end on their pay books, and there's still a hot rumor that Taka Nakagami will be given a second bike to go onto that team and be sponsored, I think, by Idemitsu, which is sponsored by now. And then, you know, does that leave that second Honda for Jack still, or is that the Honda that's going to go to Taka? Who knows?
I think Jack will be staying on the Honda. You know, we know that Jack is going to be doing the Suzuka 8-hour on a Honda with the Honda factory team. So, you know, riders generally don't do the Suzuka 8-hour for fun. It's, you know, it's a pretty grueling race, and, you know, they always do it to try and earn a bit of favor with the manufacturer. So I think that Jack will stay there. I think that Mark Vidas, you know, like Jack, you know, Jack's results aren't too bad. Sure, he's not, you know, setting the world on fire, and he's probably under delivering on what a lot of people would expect after having a 3-year HRC contract. But, you know, he's consistently in the top 10. You know, he's a funny dude, so he's good for PR and promotion. So, yeah, I think that we'll probably see Morbidelli and Miller. Interestingly enough, Morbidelli is the first VR46 Academy rider to step up to MotoGP. So it'll be interesting to see how Rossi and he get on track. Of course, lots of the young riders and Rossi don't always see eye to eye, as we've, of course, seen with Marc Marquez and at least this weekend, Johann Zarco, but I'm sure it'll all be very friendly between Morbidelli and Rossi. I'd also heard a rumour that Rossi had been talking to Davide Brivio at Suzuki to bring Morbidelli into the factory Suzuki team and then move Morbidelli, or try and move Morbidelli over to the factory Yamaha squad once Rossi retired. But clearly that was a bit of a far-fetched rumour.
Yeah, it was good for some clicks. Michelin are going to bring an additional choice of front and rear tire specifications for the German round at the MotoGP at Sachsenring. The expanded allocation is Michelin's way of dealing with the extra grip they expect the track surface to have, as we've seen in the past from track state resurfacers such as Phillip Island, where it tears the tires up, especially if the track hasn't been, you know, broken in over a season of racing. Yeah. They want to make sure they have plenty of tires, and they've also extended, I believe, Friday's practices by an additional 15 minutes each to give the riders and teams more time to set up, just in case the asphalt is a bit tricky.
Yeah, you know, we've seen in the past a lot of crashes at the Sachsenring. You know, the last year of Bridgestone, there are a lot of front-end crashes at Turn 11, you know, the top of the waterfall. It is a really tricky track because there are, on the right-hand side, because there are, I think it's 5 left-hand corners in a row and only 3 rights or something on the entire circuit. So it is really hard to get that combination right. So good to see that Michelin are bringing the extra tyre. Of course, it's an extra front and an extra rear. And also good that teams are being given 10 extra minutes because, you know, that's 25% more work that the teams and riders have to get through, because instead of having 3 choices, they now have 4. It's probably actually more than that, because since they have 4 fronts and 4 rears, they now have, like, what is it, 16 combinations of tires or something that they could run. So it's going to a lot of work to do, but, you know, good to see that Michelin are being a bit proactive about it, and not, as you say, with Phillip Island, you know, sort of getting caught with their pants down.
Yes. Moving on, the Welsh government refuses to back the Circuit of Wales in funding, which means they were underwriting. And I think we can finally put the story that's been going on for quite some time, whether or not it was going to happen or not happen. And I think at this point, it's not going to happen, because even the private funding that they did have for the track, the whole deal with that funding was that the track had to be underwritten by the government. And so now that the government is not underwriting the track, that funding is probably going to go away as well. But the big question is what happens to the contract, because as we know, they signed a 5-year agreement with Dorna to have the race there. And they were going to use a different race for 2015 and 2016. And now they're not going to have a track. So where does it go? Because they've been at Silverstone the last 2 years.
It'll definitely be at Silverstone this year. We know that for sure. But as you say, going ahead for the next couple of years of this contract, what the fuck do the Circuit of Wales do? Like, they're not making any money off of this because they have to, rent the track from Silverstone, and they're having to pay Dorna all the rights to host the GP, and then they have to pay Silverstone. So this whole thing seems like an even bigger mess than it already was. In all honesty, I think we're just going to keep going to Silverstone. For about a week we were going to Donington Park, but then the cost of bringing Donington Park up to Grand Prix standards was too much. So I think that for 99% of fans, they're not going to notice a difference, because they'll still be going to Silverstone to watch the MotoGP. Silverstone. I think Donington also technically has the homologation it needs to run a Grand Prix, but obviously doesn't have the facilities. But after those two circuits in the UK, as cool as it would be to see MotoGP at Cadwell Park or something like that, like, the circuits just aren't safe enough. So you're pretty limited, with circuit choice. But yeah, in one way it's sad that we're not getting a new circuit. But in another way, it's also quite good that we can sort of put this debacle to bed. Because it has been going on for now, what, 5 years or something?
Something like that. It's been long. By the time I was getting onto this podcast, Martin was sick of talking about it, so it had been going on for some time.
I remember. Yeah, exactly. I remember Martin talking to somebody from the Circuit of Wales, and that was at least 4 years ago. I mean, we'll bring you any more updates that come on the Circuit of Wales. But with the government basically saying no, we don't want to underwrite it, then I don't think there's going to be too many more updates. I think there could be a couple of updates to this situation though. Niccolò Antonelli sat out the Assen weekend due to an injury he picked up. Looks like he's injured his shoulder a bit. Of course, Niccolò Antonelli has had a pretty disastrous season. I think he's probably been in the top 10 maybe once or something. He continues to just crash his brains out. And it doesn't really look competitive on the IO machine, and we know how strong the IO team is. So Antonelli won't be racing at the Sachsenring, and now everybody's talking about Danny Kent coming back. Of course, Danny Kent has ridden the KTM for the Red Bull IO team, so has all the leathers already, and does have the experience, of course, riding at Le Mans there. Danny Kent still doesn't have a full-time ride, so I think it'd be good to see Danny Kent on that bike. At least it's a competitive rider. Who can help push that bike? The last time Danny Kent was at the Sachsenring, he took one of Moto3's most dominant ever victories. So he clearly goes well at the German track. For me though, the bigger question is what happens to Antonelli after this? Does he bother finishing out the season, or does he just break the contract and IO bring in Danny Kent full time?
He may not have a choice. IO might break the contract because he certainly hasn't been living up to standards. And there may be performance clauses in those contracts where they said, hey, you haven't met this many points in the championship, we're going to have to let you go, kind of situations. Which is a shame because I don't know what happened to Antonelli. Something got in between the ears some time ago. And maybe stepping away from this team will be better for him. It's hard to see that considering, IO is known for bringing up the riders, but they're. Having a relatively down year, as far as their performance has been overall. So it's, on one hand, yes, Antonelli hasn't been performing, but the KTMs haven't really been all that great. I mean, the only KTMs you see up there are what the what is the
The Platinum Bay Real
yes, there it
Estate.
is. Yeah, Darren Binder and Marcos Ramirez. I mean, they look like the factory KTM team out there right now.
Yeah, no, they're doing really good. That team has just basically just nailed a really strong base setting that works more or less at every circuit. So they're able to just do one or two small tweaks from that, and just go from there. But yeah, interesting to see what will happen with Antonelli. As we said, always been one of those guys who's promised so much. He and Fanardi came in together. Both have had their issues, but it seems like Fanardi has sort of pulled his socks up a bit more than maybe Antonelli has. Sticking with the Italian theme, Daniele Petrucci, of course, had an incredible ride at Assen, as we'll get to in a little bit. He is going to take the summer break after this round in the Sachsenring, I think, is when the summer break starts. No, we have the Brno Austria double So after those two races, as I try and go through the calendar in my head, Daniele Petrucci will be considering his options. He, of course, has an offer to stay with the Pramac Ducati team. I think they'd be pretty stupid not to give him an offer after how strong he's been this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it also seems like he has an offer from Aprilia. That would probably be to replace Lowe's. Obviously, Lowe's, we talked about last show, sort of the struggles he and the team are having gelling with each other. If I were Petrucci, I'd stay with Ducati. You know, he's on a factory bike. He can probably get more money out of his contract. He's been on that Ducati now for a long time. And I don't, unless the Aprilia paycheck is absolutely massive, I can't see why you'd get on that bike.
Yeah, it's got to be the zeros after the comma. That's the only thing I can think of that would entice him to go otherwise, because, like you say, he's been on this bike and he's just now coming into his form on a Ducati. So the Ducati's just getting to where he can ride it and go into the Aprilia. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those bikes. It's hit or miss. It seems like, you know, Aleix can ride that thing pretty fast, but Sam can't quite find his feet with it. And there's no telling if Petrucci's going to go over there and have any success just because he's been successful on a Ducati, because that's all he's ridden. So I was definitely, like you said, I would stay with Ducati because, I mean, you know, and then, of course, you get the Italian pride thing with that going, too. And, yeah, and Ducati is, you know, even though they have the factory effort, he's on the factory bike, they're treating everybody, you know, as part of the team and getting a lot of support. So in the next few years, the Ducati is only going to get better. So I would definitely stay there.
Yeah, and I think there could be a one or two Ducati riders probably asking for a bit of a pay rise next year. Especially given the performances of Ducati's highest paid rider. But in more contract news, Tatsuki Suzuki, he has signed on to stay with the SICK 58 Squadra Corsa team next year on that Honda. He's come good after a couple of difficult years now, pretty regularly up there fighting for the top 10. Francesco Bagnaia, or Pecco as he's known, will stay with the VR46 squad in Moto2. Pecco had been approached by a couple of MotoGP teams, you know, like Aspar, like Pramac, and like LCR, you know, just some initial discussions, nothing too serious. But, you know, MotoGP teams were interested in him after the pretty strong debut he's had in Moto2, but he'll be staying in the intermediate class championship for another year, which I think will be good for him. You know, he has still been a bit up and down, you know, quite literally down this weekend when he face planted off his bike. I think it'll be good. And I think Pecco will be a bit of a force next year in Moto2. In Moto3 news, Mahindra Racing announced that they would be withdrawing from the Moto3 World Championship at the end of this season as they look to focus on Formula E and EVs, or electrical vehicles, if we're not talking in buzzwords. So that's pretty sad to see. You know, never good to have a manufacturer withdraw, and obviously that now limits the Moto3 field to only KTM or Honda. So hopefully we can see somebody else jump in there. And maybe add a bit more excitement. You know, Moto3, much like Moto2 when it first started, you know, when Moto3 first started, we had a lot of different, certainly frame suppliers. You know, we had Kalex and a couple, and Suda all supplying frames and, you know, putting in KTM and Honda engines. But much like with Moto2, as it's gone on, you know, it's slowly shrunk to three manufacturers, and then for next year onwards, two. But hopefully with the, you know, hopefully with the turn of Triumph, we'll have more in Moto2. And then, you know, maybe something can be done in Moto3 to tempt, say, Yamaha or Ducati. You know, there was that rumored Ducati Moto3 project. So, you know, maybe we could have them joining in a couple of years.
Yeah, maybe Rossi can get Yamaha when he retires to start up a Moto3 team, maybe. He can have the full set going all the way through or something.
He certainly could. And in more Moto3 news, so in Catalunya, we saw that the waiting for a tow got a bit silly. You know, it's always quite bad in Moto3, but now Race Direction have brought in some new penalties. So previously, if you were caught going slower than 110% on a flying lap, you got a 12 place grid penalty, which is still true. But now, so if you're outside 110% in three or more sectors during a lap, then you receive the 12-place grid penalty plus a money fine. If you're caught doing that for the second time in an event, so say you're slow for two laps in FP1, then you will have to start from the back of the grid. If you're caught being slow three times in the same event, pit lane start. If you're caught going slow four times in the same event, you're disqualified from the race automatically. So some Moto3 kiddies really have to be twisting that throttle and not sitting up and waiting around. Because this isn't, you know, four times across four events. This is if you get caught basically cruising for four laps across a whole weekend, you're disqualified from the race.
It seems fair to me. I mean, pretty good warning, but four chances that, you know, you're going to get your warnings. And you kind of have to make it a penalty so severe that you would not even want to risk it to get people to follow it. So it's a good move. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that nothing bad has happened yet, but you don't want to wait until something bad does happen to start regulating it. So, yeah, no, I think that these rules are, as you say, quite drastic, quite dramatic, but hopefully they get a message across to these Moto3 kiddies that, you know, their bikes aren't as big as MotoGP bikes, but if you're going, you know, 20 Ks an hour and the dude who's ramming up your rear end is going at 220 Ks an hour, then, you know, that's still a 240 kilometer an hour crash and you're still both going to hurt a lot. So, hopefully we see everybody just putting their head down and doing their own thing. Speaking of Moto3 qualifying, we can jump straight into it. It was a bit of a mixed session for the Moto3 qualifying, as we had throughout most of the weekend. But it was Mr. Superpole, or Mr. Pole Position, as Moto3 doesn't have Superpole, Jorge Martin, who rocked to pole position yet again. I think he's been on pole for all but one race this year. So the Spaniard is really loving life on the Honda and really doing well, at least in qualifying. Behind him was home hero Bo Benschneider. Now, you know, usually when Valentino Rossi does something cool out on track, you hear the crowd yell. But every time Bo went to the top of a session or, you know, overtook somebody in the race, it was like Valentino Rossi was out there. The Dutch fans were going absolutely mental for him. And good to see Bo up there at his home round. He's had a tough start to the season, as you were saying, Skyler. The KTM, maybe not the most competitive machine this year with Honda, you know, really pushing hard. But Bo has been up there and, you know, was rewarded for it, at least in qualifying. Behind him was Nicolo Bulega, another rider who, you know, Skyler, you gave him a bit of a hard time last episode. So clearly Bulega's a fan of Motopod and was using that for some extra motivation as he went out there and stuck it on the front row. And then surprisingly, Nakhon Adarat Phouvahpat, the Thai rider, was in fourth, proving that Southeast Asian riders in Moto3 are absolutely brilliant in the wet. You know, we had Kyrol Idempauri last year, and now Adarat Phouvahpat is doing the same thing again this year. He dropped back a fair bit in the race, but, you know, good to see him up there. When he was racing in Sev, he also had a couple of good qualifyings as well. So, you know, clearly he can put together that one lap. And, good to see, you know, a new name up there. He was ahead of Marco Bezzecchi, the leading Mahindra in fifth, taking his best ever qualifying position. Aaron Canet in sixth. Juan Mir, the championship leader, in seventh, ahead of Tony Arbolino, Manuel Pagliani, Tatsuki Suzuki, who, as we said, has re-signed with that sick 58 Squadra Corsa team for next year, Adam Noradin, another Southeast Asian rider doing very well. The Malaysian was in 11th, ahead of Rodrigo Cornfile, Jules Daniello, Romano Fanardi, Bashanini in 17th, Livio Loi 18th, McPhee 19th, Fabio De Gianantonio 21st, Ramirez 23rd, Antonelli 25th, but then, of course, he'd hurt his shoulder. Andrea Migno, who, of course, won in Mugello, he was down in 27th place. Darren Binder, 28th. So the conditions catching out a fair few people. And a big shout-out to Patrick Polkinen, the youngest rider on the grid, taking his first ever top 20 qualifying. So all the best to the Finnish postman, Postman Pat, as he's lovingly referred to. And, because of the rain, you know, there wasn't really much towing going on in Moto3, because when it's raining, sure, you gain a bit from the slipstream, but it's, you know, nothing compared to what you gain in the dry. So the real test will be at the Saxon Ring and how everybody waits for a tow there. But again, the Saxon Ring, pretty tight circuit, no huge long straight. So hopefully there's no real issues there.
Yeah, and Saxon Ring also has chances for weather being inclement is there as well. So one thing I noticed from qualifying, I didn't get a chance to actually watch it live. I did get a chance to read through it. And what's impressive is if you pay attention to a lot of the names that are in the back of the field and who's going to be up there in the race.
Exactly.
And how fast some of those guys got up there, like Fanardi. It's impressive.
Yeah, Fanardi, McPhee, De Gianantonio, Ramirez, all of those guys shot forward. And, as you say, you know, within two or three laps were with the front group.
Yeah, because if moving on to the race, Didi Anantoni, like you said, he was the man on the move in the beginning. He went from 20th to 7th in about 2 laps, which is impressive because, I mean, although Aston does lend itself to a lot of passing, you got to kind of have the stones to pull off that many passes in that short of time. So I'm sure he was making some moves on cold tires that would freak half that field out. Bastianini, he got taken out, I think,
It was by Di Giannantonio, wasn't it? They were caught up in the same crash.
Oh, so Di Giannantonio, right after that, he lost it going into the chicane, and his bike spun back on the track right in the middle of about 10 riders, and you were just waiting, and nobody hits, and then poor Bastianini gets clipped as the bike spins, the rear tire hits his front tire, and he goes tumbling, which pretty much concluded his rough weekend.
Yeah,
unfortunately. And then, of course, shortly after that, you had three riders go down and within about 10 seconds. So you were starting to wonder if it was just rain. No, it was just Moto 3.
Yeah, it was fairly hectic. There were a fair few crashes, lots of remounts. Bastianini, he got on for a fair few laps. Lorenzo Dalla Porta, he crashed and came into the pits. Some pretty impressive repair work by his Aspar team. As they used, what was it? They used like a hairband or something to basically keep his gear lever in. Oh, it must have been his brake lever, I think it was. Yeah, they kept his brake lever in place with a hair tie so that it would stay, you know, up so that he could then push it down. It was pretty impressive to see.
Must be one of those man buns I keep seeing in the paddock there that the seems to be quite popular in the European paddocks. Pagliani definitely got the commentator's curse. They were just talking about how he was doing well and getting up there, and then he has a high side in the final chicane, and he drops shortly after that. If we go back to Di Giannantonio's crash, that also ran Aaron Canet off wide through the grass. Yeah. And this is when he started making his way back up towards the top six, and then ended up closing in for a seven-rider battle. And at this point of the race, I was waiting there. I was, where's Ramirez? Where's Darren Binder? Because you hadn't seen these guys. And then, of course, right on cue, here comes Marco Ramirez, makes it to the pack. And not only that, but he gets up to the front and actually leads the race.
Yeah, no, Ramirez, like, continues to impress, you know. I think before this race, he had 4 fourth places in a row or something. And, you know, Moto3 is always a bit of a lucky dip in that podium battle. But yeah, Ramirez is just really, really impressive. You know, we've spoken about it before that he was really strong in the Sev as well. And you know, good to see him. He really struggled on the Mahindra last year, but it certainly seems like everything is now working much better for him. So it's great to see him, you know, really, you know, show that potential. And there's a lot of big teams, namely Leopard and the IO team, that are already looking at him for next year. So you know, expect to see Ramirez's name in Silly Season a bit. Apparently that Platinum Bay Real Estate team, or whatever they'll be called next year, they have a 2-year contract with him, allegedly. So yeah, definitely watch for him, because he's going to be doing something big. Darren Binder didn't quite have the same, you know, great race that we've seen from the South African. He definitely doesn't really enjoy wet conditions, it seems.
No, and he was making it there in the second pack that was trying to bridge the gap, which had the likes of Belega and folks like that, who just, they couldn't quite make it up there. But, I mean, the finish to this race, it was freaking amazing. I think there was 1 second covering the top 10 at the end. Guys like John McPhee were up there mixing it up. He was also another guy that came from 19th, ended up, you know, fighting for the lead in the last couple of reps. But I think you can watch about the last 3 laps of that race. If you show it to anybody that's not even a fan of motorcycle racing, and they will become one, because that is tough as they are going. I think we lost right there towards the end, Adam Nordin.
Yeah, he crashed on his own.
Yeah, he got wide going into the left-hander just before the chicane, and got out to the dirty part of the track, and the front tire said no more. He skittled out. And it, you know, for the most part, it was, the elbows were out, but it was a lot of clean passing and a lot of respect between the riders getting through and being able to pull off the finish that race. Because I had to take a break after that. I couldn't just jump to the next race. I had to give myself a few minutes to kind of process what had just happened, so I could take my notes and actually focus on what was going on. Because for at least the last 10 minutes of that race, I was just locked into the screen. I wasn't even bothered jotting down any thoughts.
Yeah, no, it was really, really just, you know, incredible stuff to see from all of those guys. And as you say, they did keep it pretty clean. Jorge Martin, he was pretty hungry. He, I think it was Ramirez who he slammed into the side of, and it took a pretty big blow to his arm, in all honesty. But he was okay. And then, of course, it did get a bit hectic between, who was it? I think it was Juan Fran Guevara and Bo Benschneider at the end. Benschneider unable to cross the line because he came into contact with Guevara. And then because Benschneider wasn't in contact with his bike as he crossed the line, Benschneider was unfortunately disqualified from the race, which I thought was a bit of a harsh thing to say. I mean, you know, DNF and disqualification, you know, results in the same thing as 0 points. But yeah, I mean, he crashed on the line, and to have him disqualified, I don't know, it just seemed a bit harsh. You know, no need to rub it in on the poor boy. He's you know, he's just crashed out of his home Grand Prix. But yeah, Benschneider, he was up there as well, and you know, he was pretty lucky to not get hit by anybody as well. Of course, coming, you know, off straight on the line there.
Who was unlucky and all that? If you would believe it or not, Juan Mir was actually leading with three corners to go, just about.
Yeah, and Juan Mir himself admitted that he made a pretty big tactical error, in that race. So he definitely won't be doing that again.
No, he went from leading with about three corners to go, or so, or maybe a few more corners to go, to finishing in ninth. Mm. And had Schneider not crashed, he may have finished in tenth. So I do believe that's where he locked up. I could just look at my notes. But yeah, so, you know, we should probably go down and just spin through the final, because the winner of the battle at the front of the top group was Aaron Canet, coming across the line in first, with a tie battle with Romano Fanati in second. John McPhee coming in third. Right behind him is Jorge Martin in fourth. Jules Daniel, who's actually been having a great season quietly. He has been mentioned a few times, but he's been up in the top 10 and regularly. That's Romano Fanati's teammate, and at times he's actually given him blues on the track, which I'm sure Fanati was all kinds of happy about, because I remember he wasn't too thrilled about Bollega doing the same thing when he thought he was the number one guy on the team, which may have led to some of the alleged fisticuffs that went on that team that got him the boot.
I think there's probably a slightly less tension between Jules Daniello and Fanati. Fanati probably feels slightly less threatened by Jules Daniello.
Mm-hmm. And Marcus Ramirez, our favorite Moto3 rider that was sound in this race, finished in sixth. Gabriel Rodrigo finished in seventh. Tatsuki Suzuki finished in eighth, in front of Juan Mir in ninth, like we had mentioned. Nicolò Bollega was leader of the next pack through in tenth, followed by Philip Erdo, Juan Fong Gravera, Darren Binder, Andrea Migno, Ayumu Sasaki. How do you say that one?
Ayumu Sasaki.
Ayumu Sasaki.
The reigning Red Bull Rookies champion. He's another pretty quick dude, is Sasaki. Definitely one to watch. Hasn't quite had the same impact as some of the other guys. But yeah, he'll definitely be there in a couple of races.
And finish up with him was Marco Bassetti, Jakob Kornfeil. And then here's the name that has more letters than I think our alphabet does, that Harry can somehow pronounce.
Yeah, it's because I had to do Sev. That's the only reason. Yeah.
So how would you break that down?
Okay, so the first part's pretty easy. It's Nakarin. So
Nakarin, right.
Nakarin. Then it's Adarat.
Adarat.
Fuvapat.
Fuvapat.
Yeah, there you go. Easy.
Easy, yeah. Let's see if I remember that.
He has some really silly nickname that's like absolutely nothing like what his actual name is. I can't remember what his nickname is, but his nickname is something like Sam. Like it's some bizarre nickname like that just makes no real sense.
Well, you know, you can't blame him for making something easy after trying to explain it to people. It's like just call me Sam. Yeah, I'm good.
Exactly.
I'm good. Followed by Kaito Toba, Maria Herrera, Livio Loy, who just had another down race there, finishing 21st.
I don't think Livio Loy's time in the paddock is going to be too much longer, to be honest. He's unfortunately not really impressing too many people, and he's had some pretty good rides over the years, but never really delivered on anything.
Yeah, because he was he came in with Mark VDS when I think he was like 16, right?
Yeah.
And he kind of had this bit of a wonder kid thing and had some good results. And then I don't know if that got to his head or if the pressure got to him, but just never seemed to live up to that, quite that hype.
Yeah, but, definitely.
Yeah, so and then finishing out the leaders of Apache, let's see, Patrick Polkinen. Postman Pat, finishing 22nd. That's what we're just going to call from now. But yeah, and then of course, Norden, Bo Binschneider, Raul Fernandez, Enea Bastianini, Lorenzo Della Porta, Tony Avellino, Manuel Paglia, Fabio Di Giantonio, and Ryan Van Del. I have no idea.
I think it's Ryan Van Der Lagomat. He's a wild card. Nobody cares about wild cards, don't worry.
But anyway, none of those guys finished, unfortunately. And that brings us to our standings.
Yes, and no huge change in the standings. It does close up a bit, but it is still Juan Mir who leads the championship by 30 points ahead of Aaron Canet. Romano Fenati is 2 points behind Canet. Pretty close between those guys. Jorge Martin, he's, you know, pretty much dropped out of championship contention, if you ask me, as he now only has 89 points, which puts him 6 points ahead of John McPhee. DeGian Antonio is sixth ahead of Minho. Marcos Ramirez there is the second of the KTMs, and 15 points behind Minho. Juan Fuengelvera, then Enea Bastianini rounds out the top 10 there. And Bo Binschneider, he's 17th with 1 point more than his teammate Nicolo Antonelli, who sits in 18th place in the championship.
Yikes. It's like we were talking about earlier, the team is not having the greatest years, and you know, obviously it contributed to, you know, Antonelli didn't have the best luck in the beginning of the year, and it's continuing to follow. I mean, he's not had the results he's wanted, but Bo Binschneider's, he's another one that I feel, you know, I mean, he was up there duking it out, so, but I do feel that his size limits him in this class,
for
much
sure.
Like Bolega.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think once these guys maybe get onto something a little more, adept to them, so, you know, Moto 2 or, you know, some where they go somewhere else, you will see their talent push forward.
For sure.
In the spotlight.
For sure. And speaking of Moto 2, we'll now move on to the Moto 2 session. So we'll start with Moto 2 qualifying. No surprise that Franco Morbidelli managed to take pole position ahead of Nakagami and Thomas Luthi, with Miguel Oliveira in fourth ahead of Fabio Quartararo. Xavier Simeon, he actually did pretty well to get up there into sixth place ahead of Pacini. Alex Marquez, he was eighth ahead of Schroeder, and then Axel Pons up there in tenth. So a pretty varied field there for sure. And a couple of unusual names up towards the front that we're not really too used to seeing.
Yeah, and when this qualifying started, it was kind of the mad dash to get out there and set a hot lap because everyone thought the rain was going to be coming. And then the track had, what was it? It was a little damp, and I think Pecco Bagnaia was the first one to throw slicks on and try that out. And well, as Harry was alluding to earlier, he touched a white line and spun it up and got kicked off the bike and basically kissed the ground. I mean, he landed right on his face shield and slid. And I mean, for the most part, he kind of scraped along, so he didn't do like the direct impact, but which could have been much worse. But he was okay. He walked away.
Yeah, it was a pretty nasty crash for him. You know, the slow-mo replay probably made it seem a lot worse than it actually was. But you know, it definitely wasn't a gentle crash. And as you say, Skyle, you know, landing face first can't have been too pleasant. You know, I can think of probably nothing worse than, you know, sliding along on my face at, you know, 200 Ks an hour.
No, it always makes me wonder how the Harley riders around here, how they go without having any helmet or any face shield, because something like that happens and, well, yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be too bueno. Good that he was all okay. And then, of course, we also had a pretty scary crash for Lorenzo Baldassare that actually had the session red flagged while he received some medical attention. Just a massive high side, and the force of the crash flung him down and unfortunately did knock him unconscious. Fortunately, he was, you know, for a crash like that, relatively okay. He will be forced to miss the Sachsenring round as he has broken his ankle, I believe. So needs some surgery on that one. But, when lots of people saw that in the media center, they were very, very worried about poor Baldassare. But fortunately, as we say, he was more or less okay in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, it was a vicious hit. He went out of camera shot. He shot up so high.
Yeah.
and fell back down. And when he came down, he did the worst thing of like landing on the lower back, which just whipped him into the ground and bounced his head off the ground. So those kind of impacts sometimes it can lead to much worse. But he was actually taking photos and joking on Instagram that night from the hospital. So he's in good spirits. And he's, yeah. I think he's just, you know, like you say, he's getting surgery on the ankle and they're taking precautions on the head. But, you know, for what we thought, he turns out pretty okay. But Aston was, during the Moto2 qualifying, did collect quite a few bikes, especially in turn 15. I noticed one of the notes I had was Taron McKenzie had wadded up again, and which is, it's tough. I mean, he's gotten into this, I think it's his third race, and he's been,
third or fourth,
and he's been having a tough go at it. And I think he just jumped in on this because he was filling for somebody else. I can't remember quite, but
he replaced Danny Kent in the team.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking and wondering about McKenzie a little bit, and you know, he was obviously dominating the British Supersport Championship. You know, hadn't lost a race there, in the first whatever it was, three or four rounds of that championship. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a racer, so you know, racer's mentality is pretty different. But I don't know. I feel like I'd just be asking myself, you know, what's the point in, you know, going around and finishing in, you know, last or third from last when, you know, you could be up there winning a championship. But I guess, you know, that's the draw of Grand Prix racing, is that, you know, it is better. And, you know, even going around there and finishing in, you know, 20th, like, he's actually been doing quite well, you know, given he is a new rider with no experience on that bike. But yeah, I don't know.
I think it might be a bit like the golf thing where you go out and you don't know why you play, because you keep hitting them, shanking them left, shanking them right. It's just that one time you hit it perfect and you keep telling yourself, if I could just do that every time, I'm going to be great.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go to Moto2 and it's like, if I could just finish top five once, yeah, I'll get on a good ride to get there. It's probably that, you know, and he's a pretty young guy. So,
yeah.
It may be a bit of a lure to that.
Yeah. Maybe we're being a bit harsh overall on him.
Who knows? But like you said, the one guy that I did want to talk to, because he has been making improvements this year, is Fabio Quartararo. He finished fifth in qualifying, and that performance did carry over into the race. He had a good race, and he finally looks like he's finding his feet in Moto2, which is good, because this was the, as Harry called him, the Marquez killer. And
yeah, he was meant to be. He was meant to be the Marquez killer, but it's just not really worked for him.
Yeah, but now he's starting to find his way, and he was setting fast laps in the race and things like that. So, which is getting on to the race, unless you have anything left you wanted to say from qualifying.
No, I think from qualifying that was pretty much it. You know, no huge surprises in qualifying. Oh, Xavi Vieja, he also had a pretty nasty crash, and he had to miss the race and has gone back to Barcelona for treatment on his hand, as it looked like. I'm not 100% sure, but it looked like that the bike unfortunately did come down on his hand. So hopefully he's okay and that hasn't damaged his hand too much. He'll be replaced at the next round by a young Spanish rider called Hector Garzo, who fans of the Sev may know. He's been doing very well in his first year in Moto2 this year. So hopefully Garzo can impress some people and, you know, can take that chance with both hands.
So here we are at the race, and now, this was a little bit different this weekend because Moto2 actually ran after MotoGP.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the MotoGP race, there were sprinkles, there wasn't sprinkles, and then kind of the same thing happened for Moto2. It was dry, then it started to maybe sprinkle, not sprinkle. But that wasn't going to stop Franco Morbidelli, who shot out in the beginning, and much like his teammate did in the last race, started to pull away, but then quickly got caught, and which led to probably one of the best Moto2 races we've seen in a long time. It definitely rivals that of the Mugello race.
Yeah.
But what was nice to see is that Miguel Oliveira finally had a beginning of the race where he was up front, and I wanted to see what he was going to do now, like, given he didn't have to make up 6 seconds coming from 12th after a beginning, and to see if he was going to be actually able to run with the front guys. But he definitely put his fight in. He left a nice big black mark on the side of Morbidelli's leathers there about 5 laps into the race. As they went through, Morbidelli got a little wide, and Miguel Oliveira said, "Oh, thank you very much. I'll take that." And turns out Morbidelli was just kind of squaring up the corner a little bit, and they had a bit of contact, which was a theme in the Moto 2 race of guys nearly taking their front wheel off the back of someone else's. I think Pacini had this happen with Nakagami, and Luthi had this happen. I think somebody ran in the back of him. And Alex Marquez, I think Alex Marquez might have run the running back. It was pretty nuts. But that goes to show you how close this race actually was. And the fact that and what was nice to see is that the top six that eventually did kind of break away of Pacini, Nakagami, Morbidelli, Oliveira, Luthi, Marquez. This is like the guys that we want to see racing. These are the big guys. I mean, they're not the top six in the championship. However, these are the guys that have the big names that we've been wanting to see. If we had them all together, who was going to be able to come out on top? You know, they right from the beginning, they were stuck together and they were battling out, elbows out. Even Nakagami, who's not really known for his tenacity on the track, was giving it just as good as he got. And there was a lovely shot where Morbidelli passes him. Nakagami kind of comes back through, gets a little wide. Morbidelli runs upside and they make that that bend just before that fast left-hander. And, you know, as Taka comes back across, his elbow's already sticking out, and just kind of lays it onto Morbidelli and spreads him a little wide. And they were definitely duking it out in this race. And then, of course, Pacini was a wild man on the brace coming in and coming in.
Pacini's always a bit loose. is Pacini, and you know we really saw that on the last lap, especially from Pacini. He got a little bit risky. Well, maybe a little bit naughty with that move at the chicane. You know, he was acting like he had nowhere else to go when he did cut that final chicane, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, the problem with him is that it happened the lap before, too. He went in there and you know, someone got underneath him, so he went wide, you know, on the chicane. And the thing about that really messes him up is as he gets wide out in the chicane, he doesn't let off the gas. He's still full twist, which, you know, can be an advantage. And he's coming back onto the track wasn't necessarily safe. He did kind of cut across, even though it's the straight line from where he was. It's not the straight line at the track. And I thought for sure he was going to take out Oliveira the first time he did it. And then when he did eventually cross the line there in third after Nakagami threw underneath him going into the chicane, it was a clean pass. It was late in the breaks, but it was a breaking duel. Nakagami had the line. And unfortunately, did run Pacini wide. Pacini ended up finishing in front of him on the track, but they actually demoted him to fourth, which Pacini, he wasn't real thrilled about. Why they thought that when he pulled into pits, they should have the camera on him, because, of course, you know, he's probably going to get a fine now because of the gesture he maybe made towards somebody. But I mean, I think
it would probably be fine in terms of a fine, but you know, heat of the moment, he definitely didn't really agree with it. But after the fact, you know, he on his Instagram account, as all good riders now do, he posted that he was sorry about it. So, you know, so I think it was all forgiven, and it was a pretty blatant move that he cut the chicane. So yeah. I'm not sure how he could have really ever accepted that it was you know, anything other than a penalty.
Right, and another guy we want to talk about, Pecco Bagnaia. He had a pretty rookie race. He was kind of down, middling around in the back, and it's kind of what we expected. You know, this is why he's a rookie. I'm glad he's decided to stay another year in Moto 2, because he does look like he needs to learn. And you know, you have your good weekends, bad weekends, but what he's learning from the bad ones is what's going to be important to see next year. And it seemed like everyone that was in that top group took a turn at leading, and then unfortunately, towards the end of it, Marquez's tires kind of burned off. And which took him out of the fight. But it was none other than championship leader Franco Morbidelli cross the line in first in front of Thomas Luthi, which was important because had Luthi, I think, had finished in front of Morbidelli by the two, if Morbidelli finished third, Luthi would have been running the championship by 2 points. This is Morbidelli's fifth win, and this is Luthi's seventh podium. So Morbidelli, of course, have had the crash, but Luthi has been Mr. Consistent this year, and there's still only 12 points between him in the championship. So look for that battle to continue on. Finishing in third.
And I believe that this is the most podiums Luthi has ever had in a Moto 2 season already. So, you know, that does bode pretty well for the Swiss rider.
Yeah, he had six before over an entire season. He's already at seven, and we haven't even reached the summer break. So is definitely looking good for Luthi. And I think usually these are the tracks he starts to come good on most of the time. So I'd you know, if I really was into, you know, looking up stats, I would have gone and looked at where he finished. But, you know, just getting the shot on time was the important part this week. And not trying to be Dr. Rains over here. But anyway, like we said, Nakagami finished third. Matteo Pessini was eventually demoted to fourth. Miguel Oliveira, after running strong at the end, he was up in the fight for the putting positions. He finished in fifth. Alex Marquez, his tires kind of went off at the end. He finished in sixth. Simeon had a great race.
Yeah.
He battled it out there for about the last 10 laps with Hafi Sarin. And they, you know, eventually Simeon did pass him back, I think, on the last lap to claim seventh. Sarin finishing eighth. Quartararo, like we said, another top 10 for Quartararo. So, and he was setting fast laps back there as well. So he is, like I said, he's coming to terms with the bike. Bagnaia finishing in 10th. Marshall Schroeder, who didn't have a great start, even though he did have a decent qualifying, finishing in 11th. Agutter in 12th. Brad Binder, still not 100%, coming in 13th. Very respectable for Brad, who's just now having to figure out the bike and get his arm back up to full strength and get his head up the racing speed. In front of Harry's favorite rider, Yanni Hernandez, who is still continuing to struggle in 14th.
Yanni.
It was kind of funny with the guy. You know, he goes to MotoGP and then he comes back and we're expecting him to do big things. But if we remember correctly, we were also wondering how he got a MotoGP ride because he wasn't really doing anything great in Moto2 as it was. We just remember because he was sliding sideways. And then there was a whole, what was the team? I think even Laverty was part of it back when they were doing the CRT bikes. And Yanni got in there because he had the big paycheck.
Oh,
and maybe
Blue Sins of Intia.
Oh, look at that. Of course, Harry's good for the names. But yes. And then, you know, going back to that. Jorge Navarro finished in 15th. Another kind of, you know, rookie race for him, finishing in 15th. Finishes the points. He did have a big crash in qualifying, so he didn't have a great start. Remy Gardner in 16th. Jasco Raffin in 17th. Andrea Locatelli, 18th. Augusto Fernandez in 19th. Stefano Manzi, 20th.
I don't think
he's keeping that seat next year.
No, definitely rumors suggest that you would be correct in assuming that Stefano Manzi will probably not be keeping that seat next year. You know, Stefano Manzi had that incredible ride last year on the Mahindra at Silverstone, where he came from last to challenge for the podium. And I think that really impressed a lot of people. But since then, I don't think people have really been too impressed by him. So unfortunately for him, he's going to have to try and do something a bit special in this last half of the year if he wants to be doing anything next year.
Right, and finishing out, you had behind him Nagashima, Axel Pons, Lacuna.
Aika Lukawona.
How? Even it's, looking at that, I wouldn't have got
it's,
that
It's
one.
Because I had to do all of these in Sev last year. That's the only way I know. If I hadn't done Sev, I would be even more useless. Like, I'm so terrible with names. Like, long-term fans of Motopod will know how much I struggled with Fabio Quartararo's name. I can't even remember how I used to say his name, but it was so disgustingly wrong that I probably should have just been shot for it.
Just call him Fabio. Good enough. Edgar Pons, who's still riding off that Pons issue 40 team and spending dad's money as well, but yeah. anyway, and then Terry McKenzie and Carl Inupawi, who I think he, you know, had technical difficulties, pulled in and just kind of went back out for a glorified testing section at that point.
Yeah.
Vinales didn't finish. He had technical. Sandro Cortese had crashed. Luca Marini and Simona Corsi. Simona Corsi and Luca Marini were involved in the same crash, and I'll let you guess who took out who in that one.
Couldn't possibly guess that one, but I'll hazard a guess and say that maybe it was Simona Corsi.
Ah, you are correct, sir.
Oh, well, that is a novelty that Simone Corsi took someone here.
All right, that gets us down to our Moto2 standings. Franco Morbidelli is still leading the championship by only 12 points ahead of Thomas Luthi. And then behind him is Alex Marquez in third. So the Mark VDS is sitting 1-3 in the championship. So
yeah, not too bad for them. You know, I think that I'm not sure that Alex will challenge for the title. Is what's that now? 35 points back. So it's a pretty far. That's pretty far, but you know, nothing's impossible, but I'm really excited to see what Tom Luthi can do. I feel like we've been in this situation before with Tom Luthi where, you know, he's shown so much promise for a championship challenge. So hopefully he can, you know, actually deliver this time.
Yeah. And, you know, have we seen, you know, Morbidelli does have some chinks in the armor. So, you know, he's not a shoe in like we thought at the beginning of the year where he had won 4 out of 5, but, and Luthi has been up there. So yeah, like you said, it's going to be exciting to see where he finishes up. Miguel Oliveira, first year on the KTM, and KTM's first year, fourth in the championship. Not too bad. That's actually rather impressive. Behind him is Mattia Pessini, who, like I said, if he had had just a slightly better start to the season without those crashes, where would he be? He'd probably be, you know, harassing Marquez or maybe even Luthi by now. I don't think he'd be up there rimming Morbidelli because he just hasn't had some of those finishes even when he does stay on the bike. But anyway, good season for him. In front of Nakagami, Francesco Bagnaia, he's in 7th. Dominic Agger 8th. Marini in 9th. Verhey in 10th. Simone Corsi in 11th. Baldessari in 12th. Schroeder in 13th. Hafisaari in 14th. Quartararo in 15th. Ahead of Navarro, Binder, Yanni Hernandez, Simeon, Pons, Cortesi, Ricky Cardus, Isaac Vinales, Jessica Raffin, Danny Kent, Remy Gardner, Andre Locatelli, and Setsudo Nakashima in 28th with 1 point.
Whew, that's a pretty extensive list of names, is it there in the old Moto 2? And then, of course, there's some wild cards that aren't even on that list because that's the list of people who have scored points. So another big year for Moto 2. But it was a big MotoGP session for Q1. Of course, with the weather on Saturday, it meant that only really Friday times counted, so it was all a bit higgledy-piggledy with who was doing what over the course of the session. But we had the likes of Rabat, Smith, Jorge Lorenzo, Hector Barbera, Pola Spargo, Abraham, a returning Rins, Iannone, Alicia Spargo, Loris Baz, Jack Miller, Lowe's, and Redding in there. So, you know, out of those names, there were a lot of people who could have been in the session. You know, definitely expected a lot from some of those guys. You know, we know how well guys like Jack Miller go in Assen in the wet. So, you know, eyes were definitely on him. We know that Scott Redding's a bit of a demon in the wet as well. But it would actually be Lowe's who actually, you know, impressed everybody, I think, to sneak through into one of those two transfer spots. He managed to set a 147.191 to end about a quarter of a second behind Scott Redding. So it was a British 1-2 that advanced through to go and then do battle in Q2. Jorge Lorenzo had an absolutely disastrous session. I'm not sure if we should really be surprised by that. Of course, Lorenzo himself admits that he doesn't really do well in Assen, and he does even worse when the conditions are a bit iffy. And nothing has changed on the Ducati in regards to that statement. So, yeah, how much are they paying Jorge Lorenzo to be at Ducati again? It's a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah. Finishing that low back, and then I saw something he said. He's like, "Yeah, I'm not a specialist." That's a no shit statement there, buddy. But we're not talking about specialists. We're talking about Q2.
Okay? Yeah, talking about being competent for a yes. World champion. Yeah, yes. No, Lorenzo, I don't know. Like, every year, Lorenzo just does so bad at Assen. Like, it's almost depressing to see.
Yeah, ever since he's kind of had that crash there, it's gotten into his head. And,
yeah.
You know, I kind of thought he was one of those guys that didn't let things get in his head, but...
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, no, he's... The rain has cracked him open in a way.
It seems like, unfortunately, it has cracked him. So, yeah, he started down in 21st position for the race. And his whole weekend wouldn't really get much better. So it's unfortunate because, you know, we were singing Lorenzo's praises after it looked like he had, you know, really found something on that Ducati in Barcelona and in Mugello. And, of course, you know, on the podium in Jerez. So still a bit inconsistent for old Jorge, is it?
Yes. And then, you know, who's been consistent? This guy, Johan Zarco.
Yep. And he is pretty good on the old Yamaha. Definitely surprising a fair few people, such as myself, who thought that he'd be a bit vanilla in the premier class.
He's been anything but. I mean, you had the likes of him, Marquez, Petrucci, Rossi, and the Cal Crutchlow, Matt Vinales, and of course we had Sam Lowes and Scott Redding moving into Q2, battling it out, and you know once again. Without heat in the tires, Pedrosa was struggling, didn't look comfortable. I think he actually came in and like tried to get on different tires. Still wasn't working out for him. And Vinales once was struggling yet again in this session, which, you know, he's been having a bit of a tough time with the tires lately. And, you know, when the race comes, we'll get onto that further. But all I can say is right now when it comes to Yamahas, up until Sunday, Zarco was the man.
Yeah, and you know, Folger was right up there too. You know, Valentino Rossi this weekend was running a new frame, and lots of people have been talking. You know, is it a new 2017 frame, or did they go down to Tech 3 and ask for one of those 2016 frames back? But it does seem like it's meant to be a new frame.
Yeah, and so Johann Zarco, who pulled a miraculous pole position, I still, Yamaha needs to give him a contract. They need to keep him on the Tech 3 bike for now, because I know, like you were saying earlier, the rumor of Rossi wanting to get Morbidelli into the system so he can get on the Yamaha when he leaves, then it's going to be hard to pry that Yamaha out of Zarco's hands unless he gets picked up by some other factory team, because he is showing that you don't have to be an 18-year-old coming in from Moto2 fresh off a championship to be good at MotoGP. He is absolutely, he looks like he's been there for the last 3 years. He doesn't look like a rookie whatsoever. He's calm, he's collected. When they showed him in Parc Fermé after he set his pole position, not one drop of sweat was on him, and he wasn't even really celebrating. He's coming back and just talking to his team like, yeah, that was the plan, that's what happened.
It's actually great to see Zarco, as you say, proving that you don't have to be an 18-year-old, you know, wonder kid to come in and do it. It's really refreshing, because I think, you know, we were in a bit of danger of seeing, you know, everybody trying to find the next Marc Márquez, and, you know, unless you're under 20 and in MotoGP, then you're basically screwed. But, you know, he's, as we say, proving them wrong, and yeah, hopefully he, you know, does keep the trend going, and we see him delivering again and again. You know, he's already been on the podium once this year, has now led multiple races, so I'm feeling, in all honesty, I'm feeling pretty confident that we're going to see Johann Zarco up there again and again.
Yeah, I'd almost say, you know, it's going to be tough for him this year, but he could sneak a race win in. You know, he's been running with the top, you know, top 3-4 bikes, and he's just learning right now. He's getting faster and faster.
And especially if conditions are a bit iffy, like they were in Assen. Like, I mean, in the race, he took a really big risk, and the risk did not work out for him with the change of the tires. But, you know, maybe if he had stayed out there, you know, he's a bit less to lose than everybody else. And, you know, so maybe he pushes a bit harder when the conditions are a bit iffy. But yeah, I wouldn't rule out, you know, Zarco fighting for a win this year. That would be, you know, not too surprising. So yeah, hopefully he can do it.
So to kind of wrap up qualifying, we had Zarco on pole, Márquez in second, Petrucci with another great qualifying in third, Rossi in fourth. He actually had a decent qualifying for once, so that was going to lead to a good race perhaps. And then we had Scott Redding, Jonas Folger, you know, finishes fifth. Once again, you know, can't say enough about Folger having a great season as well. Bautista in seventh, Cal Crutchlow in eighth, Dovizioso in ninth, Sam Lowes finishing in 10th, beating out Vinales and Pedrosa. So kudos to Sam. Not only did he make it into Q2, but beat out a factory Yamaha and a factory Honda in the process. So things were looking good on Saturday for Sam after all the rumors and the paddock gossip, and what everybody known is that Aprilia was not happy with him. He was not happy with Aprilia, and that this was maybe going a long way to maybe shutting up some of those rumors. But when we got to the race, things didn't go quite the way they wanted to for Sam.
Yeah, unfortunately, Sam did have a crash. But the race got off to a pretty exciting start. As you said, Johann Zarco shot into the lead. He and Valentino Rossi had a slight disagreement over whose line was going where.
Yes, much like Coda.
Yeah, you know, Rossi, it seemed like Rossi was a bit critical of Zarco, and it seemed like some of the press was maybe also a bit critical of Zarco. You know, I saw some people saying that Rossi was taking that really wide line every lap, but I went back and watched some of the footage, and Rossi was taking a wider line, but the lap that they came together, it definitely seemed like Rossi made a mistake, to me at least. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like Rossi made a mistake that lap, and then he cut back, and it was just a racing incident. You know, I don't think that it was anybody's fault or anything like that. And I don't think it was deliberate by Zarco. You know, I don't actually think Zarco is that dangerous a rider.
No, and in that track we saw, especially in Moto 2, it lends to that, different lines and that kind of, you know, if you're squaring it off or rolling through it, you're typically going to see those things happen. So, yeah, it wasn't, like you said, racing incident.
Yeah, for sure. So that was a nice bit of excitement to start the race off. And then the race sort of just kept going from there. We had Petrucci right in the mix as well. And, you know, Petrucci was definitely the danger man in that group. Everybody worrying what would happen with Petrucci. Obviously, he has not really a lot to lose compared to everybody else. But you know, he did really, really well. Maverick Vinales didn't do so well in the race. He had a very, very strange crash at the last chicane. I'm still not really sure what caused Vinales' crash. I can't tell if he maybe he touched the curbing and lost the front, or maybe he touched the gas and lost the rear. It was a bizarre crash, and Vinales himself said he didn't really know and didn't really understand how the crash had happened. And obviously, you know, in motorcycle racing, understanding why you crashed is a pretty big thing. You know, if you understand why you crashed, then you know what not to do next time. But being left not knowing why you fell, definitely not a good one for him.
No, and then but his teammate was having a good race as Johann Zarco got reeled in by Valentino Rossi. He brought up Marquez and Bertucci with him, and then Rossi got by, and then actually he started to pull away a bit, and he had a good, you know, nice little cushion. But then this thing, these raindrops came back again, once again, and this time it was a little more serious than it was in the Moto 2. It seemed like it was definitely wetting the visors. The track was not seemingly getting that wet, but you know, guys that were way back started catching back up, and this is where Dovizioso just kind of came out of nowhere, closed about a 3-second gap in about two laps, just to show you what the speed difference they were going. Petrucci was right there with him, and they came up, and everybody got up to Rossi, but nobody could really pass Rossi. Rossi was running just hard enough to stay in front, and then when anyone would threaten him, he would get back to pushing him, because in the rain, when you're the leader, that's one of the worst positions. Yeah. Everybody can go off what you're doing. And so they were all running down to him. But as soon as they would get it to him, and Rossi was rock solid. And that, if you ever want to see how experience plays over anything else, there was a great example of it.
Yeah, it was a really, really strong race from Rossi. And as you say, when you you know, when the raindrops did come, that's when it all became a bit uncertain. Zarco dived into the pits pretty early. You know, after the race, he said he could have either been a hero or an idiot, and unfortunately, he was a bit of an idiot. Barbera followed him in. Jorge Lorenzo also came into the pits because Lorenzo said, I was really slow, you know, even before I went into the pits, so I might as well come into the pits, and if it rained, maybe I would have had an advantage. But, you know, a pretty disastrous race for Lorenzo. He made up a fair few places from 21st, as you'd expect of a factory Ducati rider, but he just... you know, just didn't really do too much overall, and yeah, I don't know. It's just so unfortunate and so strange to see a rider struggle so much at one particular circuit. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody struggle that much at one circuit.
No, I mean, there's guys that, you know, who'll be winning a bunch of races, and they'll get to a particular track and they'll finish fourth or fifth, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, this is my bogey track." But I mean, this is almost unheard of to have someone. I mean, we know how good he is, and obviously, you know, how bad he's struggling now, but you got to wonder if some of the confidence is wavering, and if that's leading to is obviously the bike is good. You know, we look at his teammate that, you know, was duking it out. Petrucci was duking it out. And right now he's, you know, what do you finish the race? Like the fourth or fifth fastest Ducati? Sixth? I mean,
yeah,
you can't have that, you know, all these guys on yesteryear's bikes and without the huge factory support and without the millions and millions of dollars that Ducati's paying you.
Yeah.
Back there. Oh, and it's not like you're a marketing force either. Like Rossi, like he can have a really shitty season, but he's still going to put butts in the seats and sell a bunch of merchandise. Lorenzo doesn't have that kind of pull.
No, unfortunately not. So yeah, I don't know. I'm sure Jorge will turn it around. And you know, as we said, this is probably just a one-off for him at his bogey circuit. But
you know, I don't think he'll have a bad race like this. There's just no way.
Yeah, he's never gone great at Sachsenring.
This is true.
But I'm not sure it could be any worse than Assen. But yeah, that's how Jorge Lorenzo went. And hopefully it goes better for him next time out. Of course, on the last lap, it did come down to the last lap. Petrucci was really gaining on Rossi, but he had Hector Barbera. He got in the way a bit, as did Alex Rins. And Danilo Petrucci, who's, you know, usually super bubbly, you know, really happy, loving life, he was actually quite pissed off after the race, saying, you know, there were no blue flags, you know, what was going on, et cetera, which was fair enough, because... you know, certainly judging by his pace, that he was able to close down a half-second gap even with those back markers in the way. So you'd have to think that, you know, he could have at least been in with a bigger chance of getting the W in that race. Of course, would have been his first ever MotoGP win. So yeah, we'll have to see how that situation does develop. Blue flags can often be a bit can often be a bit of a tricky topic, can blue flags, because you know they're not always showing. So yeah, that was that one. And but you know, still a great ride from Daniele Petrucci. Can't really fault him for what he did. I think Petrucci, as we said before, you know, continues to just raise his stock in the MotoGP paddock.
Yeah, and you know, he finished second, which you know, Rossi of course went on to win the race, his 10th at Assen, I believe, since I think they had a big stat there. It was his first race win was in 1999. And this makes it Rossi is now has the longest winning MotoGP career of anyone. It's something like 20 years and 300 something days or something like that, which is just absolutely amazing. Listen, Petrucci in second, Mark Marquez in third. So with Rossi and Marquez on the podium, I think I win our predictions from last time. I had 2 out of 3 Vinales went down.
Did
for
you?
Me.
I can't even remember who I put. And that's not even me making excuses. I just legitimately can't remember.
Right. I listened back to the episode like I typically do, but that's the only time I remember. Oh, yeah, we talked about that. Anyway, Cal Crutchlow finishing in fourth, and he would later to go on to say that he wished he had made his move on Marquez on the last lap instead of the penultimate lap, because Cal Crutchlow said, if I was a poker player, I would be absolute shit because I gave away my hand too early. So thank you, Cal, for another soundbite that we all love and can appreciate. He finished in front of Andrea Dovizioso, who finished in fifth, but that doesn't matter because now Andrea Dovizioso is the championship leader.
Yep, certainly is. What a season. What a season.
Because if you had gone down and made a bet on Andrea Dovizioso at the beginning of the year of him winning the championship, you could have probably had quite the good odds in your favor, and you'd be looking maybe at a few bucks coming your way these days.
Yeah, probably, because... Yeah, I'm not sure that anybody would have seen that one coming. That's for sure. But you know, fair play to Dovi. And you know, again, much like with Mattia Pessini, you know, what could have been if Dovi didn't crash, in Argentina. You know, it's crazy, or not crazy, but it's just a great year. You know, I think that this is going to be another vintage MotoGP year. You know, we were treated to such a fantastic year last year, and I think that this one is going to be as good, if not even better. We may not have the same number of variety of winners, but you know, the racing is just as good, if not better, than last year.
Right. It's hard to find it because how can it be more exciting when we had so many race winners? But it's like the drama's better this year. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, we have more race winners, but what's going on in the track is, okay, it's down to who doesn't crash in the last 5 races might win this thing.
Yeah.
But because it looked like, you know, when Rossi went down in Le Mans, it's like, oh, he's out of it now. He's right back in it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, okay. No, it's an incredible year. And I think this is the closest the championship has been after 8 rounds since, you know, the point system came in 1993 or whatever year it was. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it really is a vintage year of MotoGP. And, you know, if you don't have any, you know, if you have some friends who are, you know, maybe humming and hawing about watching MotoGP, I would definitely recommend that you get them into it this year. Because, you know, they don't have to know everything about racing, but I think that Assen is one of those ones that would be exciting for just anybody to watch, even if they only have a passing interest in motorcycle racing.
Absolutely. Finishing in sixth was last year's Assen winner, Jack Miller, another great racer, Jack,
yeah,
which is
really,
probably
really
going
solid.
Going a long way to getting him another contract, which would be good to keep him around, in front of Carol Abraham, who finished seventh. And, you know, I didn't even think about that till now, just reading through. He finished seventh. What a great race for Abraham.
Yeah, that matched his best ever MotoGP finish. The Aspar team were absolutely over the moon with that finish, which is, you know, fair enough. It was a great finish for him. And, you know, once again, proving that, you know, he's not going to win a race. Let's be honest. He's not going to win a race. But I think that Carol Abraham, you know, is doing better than Yoni Hernandez did. I was chatting to the Aspar press officer, and he was saying that already this year, Carol Abraham has equaled the points that Yoni got in all of last year. So, not too bad at all for Yoni Hernandez.
Nope. And he finished in front, Carol Abraham.
Yeah, sorry for Carol Abraham. Yeah, no, it was a disastrous season for Yoni Hernandez. Jesus.
Yes. Abraham finished in front of Loris Baz, who had a good race, in front of Andre Iannone, who, after we talked bad about him, maybe got his spurs up a little bit. He was a little closer to the front, and he kind of faded towards the end. He finished in front of Aleix Espargaró, who finished in turn in front of his brother, Pol Espargaró, who finished in front of Tito Rabat. Danny Pedrosa, down in 13th. Danny did not have a good weekend. He does, you know, he has to have heat in the front tires, and it was a cold, chilly day, and, well, yeah, it's not, did not lend itself to Pedrosa, and Pedrosa better hope for some sun in Germany, because that track, the Sachsenring, because it's known to be cold and wet up there too, so he may struggle again, and his championship may start to slip out of his hand. He finished in front of Johan Zarco, like we had mentioned. He pulled in to swap tires, which was not a great idea, in front of Jorge Lorenzo, that also did the same thing as Zarco. However, Zarco did finish on the lead lap, which Lorenzo did not. Lorenzo ended up getting passed by Rossi, and I can only imagine when Rossi flew past Lorenzo how he must have felt when that came up, for not one, but many reasons.
Yeah, that was probably probably pretty embarrassing for Jorge Lorenzo. People probably already know about this, but there's this Facebook page called Dear George, which is
Love that. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, which is written by Boris, the Australian biker journalist. And if you haven't read Dear George, I'd recommend going there. I know a lot of people don't like it, but if you go there knowing that it's all a joke, it's pretty funny.
It's great.
so yeah, I'd recommend that everybody goes and has a look at that one, because you do, especially this latest one about him getting lapped by Rossi. It is so funny.
Yes.
And I'd recommend going to it. We probably won't link to it because it's a bit of a polarizing thing, is Dear George, but just search Dear George on Facebook. It's also on bikeme.tv, which is the website that Boris writes for.
Yep.
And
right behind him, finishing out the rest of the guys, Barbera and Rins finish out the field. Scott Redding had a crash, didn't finish. Bautista crashed out. Bradley Smith, I'm not sure if he crashed or if he had a DNF or a technical DNF. Vinales, they said, crash. Folger crashed. And that, when Folger's crashed, that is the last rider to have scored points in every single race this year. So now that record is
really
gone.
Oh,
yep. He was the only rider that has scored points in every race this year, and that is no longer the case. So, like I said, Folger, even with this crash, still having a great rookie season.
Yeah.
I mean, and then, you know, unfortunately finishing the least amount of laps completed with Sam Bowes, who at this point I think has pretty much cemented his exit from Aprilia.
Yeah, now, I don't know. You know, Lowes did have some flashes of good pace this weekend, and, you know, he does have a two-year contract, so, you know, by the letter of the law, he should get that second year of the contract. But as you say, you know, he's not really had great results. But to be fair, the team also haven't really been playing ball with everything. You know, we've seen his second bike not be ready during qualifying and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a really tricky situation, I think.
Yeah. Now, I have a drinking game we can play. Now, I don't know if you want to play this game, because it's probably going to kill you.
Okay.
But you have to take a shot every time they say master class or master stroke during a race, because I swear to God, by about halfway through that race, you'll be sick.
Yeah, no. I think Nick Harris and Matthew Burtz, I think there's one or two drinking games for the MotoGP commentary team.
They may be playing before they even get in the booth. I don't know. But I just thought that was always funny. I was like, how many times can you say? It's just this season, too. It's like they didn't really say it last year until Jack had his masterclass win at Assen. And then it's just been fucking running downhill with it. But I guess when you talk that much, you eventually run out of words to say. You probably just all sounds the same in a blender.
Yeah, no,
you?
For sure. I catch myself now that I'm pointing it out, everybody's going to hear it. I catch myself saying fantastic as basically every second word in World Superbikes, and everybody picks me up on it. And, like, it's so hard to you know, to try and think of other words. And, like, once you know about doing it, you catch yourself doing it so, so much, and it's so hard to break the habit.
Right. It's like, you know, when you're doing the podcast, I listen back to here and I get a bad case of the likes or you knows. And there was, a couple podcasts ago we were doing, and both of us were like, you know, it's like, ah, shit. So just giving them a hard time. They do a great job. And I just thought I heard that way more than usual this weekend. But Anyway,
but to be fair, it was a masterclass in wet weather riding by Valentino Rossi.
It was. He pulled it out. It had been a year and some change since his last race. So a masterstroke by the doctor. Mm-hmm. But who's been having a masterclass of a season is Andrea Dovizioso. Like we said, he's leading the championship now, 4 points in front of Marek Vinales, who is in turn leading his teammate Rossi by a mere 3 points. So this championship is tight because Marc Marquez is in fourth, only 4 points behind Rossi. So your top four are separated by 11 points. That's one factory Ducati, two factory Yamahas, and a factory Honda. So there's some variation up there as well.
Yeah.
Danny Pedrosa in fifth, like we said, his championship, he sits, you know, he's at 87 points behind Marc Marquez's 104. So Danny is starting to slip out of championship contention. Johann Zarco is at 10 points behind him with 77 and 6. Daniel Pedrucci, with his recent records, he has now jumped up to seventh in the championship in front of Jorge Lorenzo. So Jorge is now behind one of the Pramac Ducatis, but I predict that that may not be much longer because, like we said, Lorenzo's got the skills, but Petrucci is on a roll. So.
Petrucci is really on a roll. And what I love about Petrucci is just, you know, he really just fucking grabs that bike and just throws it around. You know, Petrucci is just such an aggressive physical rider. It's just so great to see.
Yeah, that's kind of what the Ducati wants. Ever since Stoner's been on it, he was a manhandling that bike around, and that's kind of one of the things that leads to Jorge's struggles because he's such a smooth rider. He's just, you know, he's got a new girlfriend, and she likes it rough, and he doesn't know what to do.
Jesus. Okay, on that note, we should probably end this episode. I think we've said all we need to say.
Right. So, and then Jonas Folger. He sits in 10th in the championship. You know, like I said, he's, you know, 10th and he's a rookie doing a fantastic job. And that's pretty much, you know, everybody else just kind of filters in through the back, like we've already said. But yeah, another great weekend at Aston. You know, Aston, like I said, is one of my favorite tracks. And now we're going to lead into the Sachsenring, which is definitely a Marc Marquez track. So if we're doing predictions, I don't think I can go any other way but to say Marquez, Dovizioso, and Rossi for my podium. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Marquez, Petrucci, and Cal. That's going to be
all right.
So yeah, Cal. A bit different. But, you know, Cal did pretty well there last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we could see them. But as you say, Marquez is the Lord of the Ring, as all the headlines will say.
I should probably wrap it up because that's it for me, unless you have anything else you wanted to bring up.
No, that is absolutely everything I can think about saying. So thank you for joining me, Skylar, and hopefully everybody has enjoyed this episode and are enjoying hopefully being slightly more regular on the upkeep for this one. And hopefully we'll be able to do it all again soon.
Yes, and like I said, you can always reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. I am on Twitter and Instagram, SkylarV28. Harry is on Twitter, HLComs, HLPhotoGP on Instagram. You can find us there to see things that maybe aren't necessarily motorcycle related, for opinions. I may throw a few things up there after a few beers that are interesting once in a while. Or you can see all the cats that I have that have been relatively quiet since I've been doing the show. We have 6 here that I'm surrounded by, so they're being very nice right now.
What is it with Motopod? What is it with Motopod hosts and cats? You and Martin all have all these cats.
And we have them the same way. We find them all. Yeah, no, there was the original set was... we don't need to talk about this on the show. This can be something after the show. All right. Thank you for joining us, everybody. And we will have some more coverage of other stuff next time. I know me and Scott will be getting together to do a little Moto America chat for the last two rounds. We'll get that on to the next show. Cool. And then, like we said, we are talking to several people and expanding the show with some new house. But like I said, thank you for everyone writing in. And the Sheen contest is still going on, so make sure you get those emails in. And until then, I'll see you next time.
Bye.